Today's reading is in Mark chapter 11, starting in verse 12. Mark chapter 11, verse 12. On the following day, when they came from Bethany, he was hungry, and seeing in the distance a fig tree in leaf, he went to see if he could find anything on it. When he came to it, he found nothing but leaves, for it was not the season for figs. And he said to it, "May no one ever eat fruit from you again." And his disciples heard it. And they came to Jerusalem, and he entered the temple and began to drive out those who sold and those who bought in the temple. And he overturned the tables of the money changers and the seats of those who sold pigeons. And he would not allow anyone to carry anything through the temple. And he was teaching them and saying to them, "Is it not written, 'My house shall be called a house of prayer for all the nations'? But you have made it a den of robbers." And the chief priests and the scribes heard it and were seeking a way to destroy him. For they feared him, because all the crowd was astonished at his teaching. And when evening came, they went out of the city. And as they passed by in the morning, they saw the fig tree withered away to its roots. And Peter remembered and said to him, "Rabbi, look, the fig tree that you cursed has withered." And Jesus answered them, "Have faith in God. Truly I say to you, whoever says to this mountain, 'Be taken up and thrown into the sea,' and does not doubt in his heart, but believes that what he says will come to pass, will be done for him. Therefore I tell you, whatever you ask in prayer, believe that you have received it, and it will be yours. And whenever you stand praying, forgive, if you have anything against anyone, so that your Father also who is in heaven may forgive you your trespasses." Sometimes when we read about Jesus and the fig tree, we begin to have questions of, first of all, why was it included in the Gospels? And second of all, you know, why did Jesus expect fruit from this tree if it was not the season for figs, as the book of Mark, verse 13, chapter 11 states? But I'll pose to you a couple of thoughts for you on that. First is, I think he's laying a groundwork. When we get into chapter 12, he's going to start teaching about bearing fruit. So I think the tree is representative. The tree is there in order to give some illustration for later. The second thing is, it does say he was hungry, and he went to the tree expecting to find fruit. So I was looking this up, trying to figure out what the season for figs was. In other words, is it a figure of speech? Is it, talking about a particular time of year? Was it maybe that it could have some early fruit? What was the case? Apparently, the way this is translated is not completely accurate to the way that it is in the original Greek, in that season for figs really means the time to harvest. In other words, the end of the season. So earlier in the season, there would still be fruit that would be edible. It just, the tree wouldn't be completely covered in fruit yet at the time in which people would come to harvest them. And of course, it does say a fig tree, so it seems like this tree is off out by itself. It's not in like an orchard or somebody's garden, anything like that. So anyway, just a couple of thoughts of why this is included, and I think that'll become a little bit clearer when we get into chapter 12. But Jesus curses this tree and says, "May no one ever eat fruit from you again." Again, I think that's going to be an illustration for later. So then he comes to Jerusalem, and they enter the temple. And Mark phrases this a little bit differently than other gospel writers, being fairly matter-of-fact with the way he presents this. You know, enters the temple, driving out those who sold and those who bought, overturning the tables. You know, in other accounts, you see a little bit more of the emotion recorded, that he was zealous for the things of God and for the house of God. But here, Mark just states it as, this is what happened. And it says he would not allow anyone to carry anything through the temple. Now, keep in mind, there was nothing wrong with, you know, buying what you were going to have sacrificed. You know, there was allowance under the old law for people to be able to purchase, you know, doves, for example, that would be used in the sacrifices and such, especially if they had to come at some great distance in order to get there. However, this had become a part of the temple practice. In other words, it's inside the temple grounds now, so that they're conducting business where it should be worship, and that is what the problem is. We need to remember that God never is going to like us corrupting the purpose of worship. He's never going to like us corrupting what he asks of us. And so even sometimes something that might be lawful, you know, the buying and the selling, but they changed where it was, when it was, all of those sorts of things that brought it closer and closer into the temple so that it becomes, you know, a place of merchandise instead of a place of worship. And that is then a corruption of both the place and the worship itself. So that's what Jesus is really upset about. And that's verse 17. Is it not written, my house shall be called a house of prayer for all the nations, but you've made it a den of robbers. And there's some implication there that there's some underhanded dealings going on, or, you know, somehow they're taking advantage of people in these various circumstances. We don't have all the details. We just have that comment to lead us to that conclusion. And so the chief priests, the scribes, they're pretty upset about this. They don't like it. You know, this is something that they've allowed to happen at the very least, or approved of and brought in themselves on the other end. So whatever the case, this is going against their authority. And so they look at it like a challenge. Like Jesus is challenging their authority, and that upsets them. But because the crowd is listening to him, the crowd is paying attention to him, and they are very much popularists, they don't want to do anything at this time, even though they are very upset. So then afterward, they go out to the city, they go back by this fig tree, and they find it withered away. And that makes sense. Your creator says, I'm not happy with you. What do? You wither up and die. That's what the tree did. And again, this is representative of how we should be in the eyes of God. You're either pleasing to God or you're not fulfilling your purpose. You're not doing what you're supposed to do. This fig tree didn't do what it was supposed to do. The creator was unhappy with it. And so it withered away and died. And we don't do so outwardly for everybody to see that we wither away and die when we don't have a relationship with God, but spiritually we do. Spiritually we are withering up and dying. Well, this opportunity also allows Jesus to do a little teaching regarding faith and prayer. And he says, have faith. I say to you, whoever says to this mountain, be taken up and thrown into the sea, and does not doubt in his heart, but believes that what he says will come to pass, it will be done for him. So he's talking about the power of prayer. I don't think anybody is wanting to have a mountain thrown into the sea. But his point is, you need to believe. You need to ask with faith. And then he also adds to this, whenever you stand praying, forgive if you have anything against anyone, so that your Father also who is in heaven may also forgive your trespasses. And so the idea is that you don't want any barriers between you and God. When you pray, you're asking for something from the creator of the universe who has the power to answer your prayer, and you don't want that prayer hindered. James chapter 1, verse 5, he's talking about wisdom, but notice what he says. If any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask God, who gives generously to all without reproach, and it will be given to him. But let him ask in faith, with no doubting, for the one who doubts is like a wave of the sea that is driven and tossed by the wind. For that person must not suppose that he will receive anything from the Lord. He is a double-minded man, unstable in all his ways. So we need to ask in faith without doubting. Then at the end of James' letter in chapter 5, verse 16, the prayer of a righteous person has great power as it is working. And then he uses Elijah as an example. He was a man with a nature like ours, and he prayed fervently that it might not rain. And for 3 years and 6 months, it did not rain on the earth. Then he prayed again, and heaven gave rain, and the earth bore its fruit. So it's very important that we understand the concept that Jesus is teaching his disciples and that is taught elsewhere, that we need to ask in faith when we approach God in prayer. And so the limiting aspect of prayer is whether we have the right faith and whether we doubt. Now, that doesn't mean that God's going to just do anything that we ask of him. It has to be according to his will. But we need to realize that we must have that belief, that faith in him, that not only can he answer the prayer, but will answer the prayer according to his will. So with that thought, engage God in prayer today. approach him courageously in faith and ask him for the things for which you need. Pray for each other and continue in prayer daily. As I've been saying as we've been doing these readings, continue in prayer that God may be with us all. Thank you for listening today.